It's Wednesday, the 18th of May, 2016. Happy birthday to Clint Capella. Red Rock Basketball Monster Show, brought to you by Loot Crate and Shoe Shines FTW. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be a sponsor of the podcast like Shoe Shines FTW, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can become a sponsor of the podcast for a day. If you are watching this show live on YouTube, which you can always do, you can tweet at me at redrock_bball for any questions or comments that you have, and I'll be happy to interact as the show is going live to air. So everyone who is watching along live, tweet at me if you've got any comments, criticisms, concerns, queries, anything along those lines. We're in the middle of the conference finals here. Obviously, a massive win today to Cleveland over Toronto. The Thunder with the upset over the Warriors. We're not talking about those here, though. We're moving into the season review shows. We had the NBA draft lottery today, which ended up being little bit of a non-event, with everything basically falling in the exact order of the standings and the way it finished. So everything, nothing changed. Any mock drafts that had been done previous to the lottery or prior to the lottery remain intact. Everything is exactly how it was before we went in. So a little bit of a non-event. I was hoping for the Bulls to sneak up into one of those top couple of picks. Didn't happen. Obviously, we picked now 14th, but obviously Philadelphia would be pretty happy with getting that pick one. The Lakers don't lose their pick. Everything's going well for all. It's not going well, but it's on the way up for both of those franchises. As I said, this is the start of the season in review shows. We're going to be tackling the Philadelphia 76ers in this show. So
let's get to it.
Michael Bolton, he doesn't take a break for the postseason or the playoffs or the offseason. He's here all the time. All right, so this is not your usual show, and you'll see that over the next 30 shows, next 29 shows after this one. A different format of what we're doing. We're going to be reviewing what happened with the Philadelphia Sixers, and go back over sort of what happened during the season, answer some of your questions which people have tweeted in. And each time before these shows, I'll put out a tweet, I'll put out a Facebook post asking if you have any specific questions. As I said, if you are watching live, you can chime in with anything that you've got as we're going live, but otherwise you can pre-prepare questions, which many of you have done. We'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about players who are on the way up, players who may or may not return, just general chatting about what happened during the season, maybe an early look ahead of what to expect next season, and some interesting information for Dynasty players, which I know that Dynasty basketball is growing in popularity every year. We're going to be announcing a couple of Dynasty leagues over the next couple of weeks for participants as well, so make sure you're staying tuned for all the information of how to join those leagues. And it is a very popular, or becoming very popular, fantasy basketball format, and that's yeah, it's a great way. It's very, very engaging playing Dynasty. So we're going to be talking about Dynasty value in this show. I don't know how long these shows are going to go for. I guess we'll just wait and see how it all pans out. I think last year when we did them, they went for about 30 to 35 minutes. I don't think we're going to be going longer than an hour, but if I don't stop waffling, we will end up going longer than an hour. Let's talk Philadelphia. We know the story with Philadelphia. They finished 10-72. Last year, a terrible season, almost the worst of all time. But there's a lot of misinformation that gets put around about Philadelphia, and you'll read it in articles that are in reputable places talking about the Sixers, and it's very lazy narratives that get thrown out about Philadelphia. I had my say on Sam Hinkie when he resigned a few months back. But the talk of the Sixers, oh, they've been the worst team in the league for each of the last 4 years, and it's blatantly untrue. They, you know what? Yes, they were the worst team this year. They weren't the worst team last year. Minnesota was worse. They weren't the worst team the year before that. Milwaukee was worse. They weren't the worst team the year before that. They were actually pretty solid. And the year before that, they were in the playoffs. So people act like it's been... I saw someone literally the other day say they've been terrible and they've been tanking for 20 years. It is blatantly untrue, but people will believe anything they want to say. Oh, the Sixers, they're tanking. Shit. It'll happen all the time. Yes, they've been atrocious. You know my thoughts on what they're building towards, and it started today with getting that first... Well, it didn't start today, but it's the fruition. It's starting to come to fruition. They could be adding either Brandon Ingram or Ben Simmons. They could be adding Joel Embiid. They could be adding Dario Saric to this team. Plus, maybe they add a mid-level free agent. Not getting a top-level free agent. Maybe they add a mid-level free agent. Things will start to turn around for this team. But lazy narratives are the worst team. They've been the worst team for 5 years, for 10 years. It's a load of shit, and you can't believe everything that you read. You need to have a very keen eye and a very focused eye to see these things, because they're literally blatantly untrue. This is the first time that the Sixers have had the worst record in all of this tanking era. And not through lack of trying. I'm sure they want to get the number one pick. It hasn't happened for them. But they haven't been the worst team. There have been teams that have been worse than them every season that they've embarked upon this process, the last three seasons. And finally, it turned up for them getting the number one draft pick. One other thing, they announced the StubHub jersey sponsorship. I literally have no problem with this whatsoever. Reading the comments section on articles of this on Yahoo, on RealGM, in Facebook, people act like literally the sky is falling. It is baffling to me, the response that people are having to this StubHub patch. I will not watch the NBA again. This is disgusting. How dare they? These things are sacred. Just calm your tits. Relax. It's a tiny patch that's up there. The same as the Nike logo is going to be on the other side. There's advertising all over the place. There's advertising on the broadcast, on the court, on the scorers table, at the names of the arena. Maybe I'm used to it because we've been dealing with sponsorship on jerseys here in Australia for I don't even know how long. With the Australian Football League's had sponsors on jerseys. We've got a small one up the top, very similar to the NBA, up on that top spot. We've got one along the back, down the bottom, underneath the number, and we have a little one on the shorts as well, in the bottom corner. Yeah, it's important for our clubs. It's one of the lifelines to survival. I know it's not necessarily the case in America with the sport, but to me it has zero impact. And then all the bad jokes. Oh, of course the Sixers would get StubHub. Imagine a good team, how much money they're going to get if the Sixers got $5 million. The good teams will get 20 million. Just ridiculous jokes. But I'm a glutton for punishment. I read the comments and it continues to do my head in. I've literally talked shit here for way too long. Let's get into this team. I talked about their record. It was bad. It was poor. Draft picks. Amazingly, the Philadelphia Sixers have no second-round draft picks this year. They traded two of them to get Ish Smith to the New Orleans Pelicans, but they have three first-rounders. They didn't get that fourth. The Lakers kept their pick. Maybe they get it next year. They have pick 1, they have pick 24, and they have pick 26. Obviously, 24 and 26 aren't prime first-round picks. Pick 1 is pretty bloody prime. So they're going to be having their choice between Brandon Ingram, Ben Simmons. I reckon you're going to have a 50-50 split on people thinking of which ones they are, of who's they going to pick. Oh, they're definitely picking Ingram. They'll definitely pick Simmons. To me, Simmons is the better player. But in terms of how he fits, it's a completely different situation. And we're going to do more draft stuff as we move into the season. But it's safe to say that either Ingram or Simmons are going to find themselves in Philadelphia next season. So that's their draft picks. They've got three first rounders. They've got obviously a lot of holes to fill on this roster. I'm going to start all of these season review shows by looking at who they've got as upcoming free agents. And they don't have many free agents. They have Ish Smith, who's an unrestricted free agent. They've got Elton Brand, who's an unrestricted free agent. And let's be honest, he won't play. He's retiring. And they've got Christian Wood, who's a restricted free agent, who we'll talk about a little bit later on. But he could be brought back, but I'm a little bit worried that he won't be, just with the change in regime. And I do not trust the Colangelos to recognize the potential in Christian Wood. Maybe they do, but I'm not overly convinced. They've got a lot of guys who have got non-guaranteed deals, though. TJ McConnell's deal is non-guaranteed. You'd have to think that he'd be brought back. Jeremy Grant's deal is non-guaranteed. He will definitely be brought back. Isaiah Cannon's deal is non-guaranteed. That's up in the air. Robert Covington's deal is non-guaranteed. He'll be back. Kendall Marshall's is non-guaranteed at over $2 million. Zero chance that he is back. So they've got a few decisions to make on guys, but as for actual free agents, only three, and one of those is Brand, who is going to be retiring. So Christian Wood and Ish Smith are the other guys who are currently listed as free agents. Let's talk about what happened last season for the individual players on this team. What we're going to do, and what we do when I talk rankings a lot, I like to look at things in a head-to-head league, especially from a punting point of view. And if you're punting, your players aren't contributing in 9 categories or 8 categories. So I look at a ranking. You see the rankings over on Basketball Monster, but I also do a separate ranking. I almost said wanking. A separate ranking there of removing the players' worst two categories, because I think that gives a more accurate representation of what their actual strengths are. So these are my top six categories for this player, and this is where they rank against everyone else's top six categories, because it's more realistic than, rather than seeing Andre Drummond ranked 90th when you know he's not the 90th ranked player in a head-to-head league. He's way, way better than that. DeAndre Jordan, you know, guys like Ricky Rubio with their field goal percentage, it bumps them up significantly. So I do that ranking as well. The, you know, I call it an 8-2 or a 9-2 ranking, just to give us a bit of an idea. So we'll go through these players, talk about sort of where they fell for the season, and a bit of a narrative on their year. I'm going to start with the player who was the best fantasy contributor for the Philadelphia 76ers last season, and that was Nerlens Noel. He was disappointing to start the season, definitely, and he was dropped in leagues, which was just batshit ridiculous craziness to have Nerlens Noel dropped in leagues. He came back really, really strong in the second half once Ish Smith arrived, and when Jahlil Okafor went down, he started to really produce, and he was a top 10 player for a stretch there throughout January, February. He was putting up big numbers. We were thinking that he was going to be a top 30 player for the season. Didn't end up that way. He was a top 50 guy in 8 cat leagues. He was 47th there. He was 57th in 9 category leagues. Actually turned the ball over quite a bit, and his 8-2 rank was 36, which is in line. It's better than what he was last season, where he finished 44th. So a definite improvement despite a real slow start and despite the team performing worse. But Noel is a guy that is, I know that he's really fantasy friendly because of what he does in the steals and blocks categories. Now, he was averaged 1.8 steals, he averaged 1.5 blocks. He was a threat to me to be a 2-2 guy, a 2 steals per game and a 2 blocks per game guy. Didn't eventuate in that manner. It did for big stretches of time, and that was obviously key to getting his ranking up there. But it wasn't the case for the majority of the season, and he actually had a drop in his block numbers last year. And some of that's the fact that he played out of position. He was playing at power forward with Okafor as the center. He did have an improvement in his field goal percentage, increased that by 6%. So that's a bonus. He rebounded at the exact same rate despite playing less minutes this year. He scored almost over a point extra per game as well. And he did show development. And I think that Nerlens Noel is going to be a top 30 player in the coming seasons. The problem is obviously the stacked front court. You've got Okafor there. You've got Joel Embiid there. You've got Dario Saric coming over. You could be adding Ben Simmons to this mix, whose natural position is probably at the 4. They might have to play him at the 3, but I don't love them playing him at the 3. So there is a bit of a squish there, but I think if someone gets traded, it's going to be Okafor rather than Noel, and we'll see how that all plays. Well, both guys could get traded, but they wouldn't be doing it this year because they're not going to be going, well, we're trading Noel, we're trading Okafor because we're going to rely on Joel Embiid to be our center moving forward, which you can't do at this point given that he hasn't played. But Noel, to me, is a guy that has a tremendous amount of ability. He led this team in win shares. He had a massive defensive box score plus minus. He was at 3.4, clearly the best on the team there. And he was the only player on the Sixers who had a box score plus minus in the positives. He ended up being 0.7. His offense wasn't great, a negative 2.7, but overall his production was pretty impressive. I think that Nerlens Noel is only 21 years of age. He's heading into his third season, which is third and fourth seasons are times when guys do tend to break out. It's actually his fourth season in an NBA environment, third season on the court. I think he could be in for a really big season, but a lot of it is going to depend on what the Sixers do with all these players that they've got. It might be a decent time to buy low on him in Dynasty, because if people have that concern, Okafor, Embiid, Saric, Simmons, all these guys who, well, I say Simmons, it could be Ingram, but Ingram is more likely to play the 3. Even irrespective of that, even if you go Saric, Okafor, Embiid, Noel, those 4 guys, there's not enough minutes, not enough production. So he might be a little bit of a discount here. He actually didn't end the season as strongly as what he had. He had that nice little run coming into that January, February, but post-All-Star, his rankings were all lower than what they were pre-All-Star. So that's not a great way to finish the season. Had a little bit of an injury as well. So it's the time to sort of search out the Nerlens Noel owner. You have to watch for his free throw percentage. It's less than 60%. It's not quite punt worthy, but you need to be able to absorb it. It's time to search them out and see what sort of value you can get for a guy like Nerlens Noel, because he does have, he's got, you know, top 20 upside. Maybe not next year, but he could be a top 20 player at some point throughout his career. Robert Covington, he's like Noel and like the Sixers. They won one game up until Christmas. They were horrible. And he started off the season really poorly, suffered that ankle injury in preseason, which did really slow him. And severe ankle injuries take a long time for people to get over. So some of his poor play can be blamed on that, but he did start to get really, really hot towards the end of the year. But again, like Noel, he was dropped in a lot of spots, and you picked him up off the free agent wire. He was ranked 63rd in 9-cat leagues. He was 59th in 8-cat leagues. His 8-2 rank was 53rd. And these are all impressive numbers, improvements over last year. In fact, post-All-Star break, he was ranked 37th in 9-cat leagues. He was ranked 41st in 8-cat. So a big improvement for Bob Cove in that time frame. The problem with Covington is, as the team gets better, does he get squeezed out of a role? He was basically average offensive box score plus minus, average defense, and negative 0.2 and 0. So right on being that replacement level player type of guy. His win shares were second highest on the team, so that's obviously pretty decent. He hits the three at a pretty solid rate. He scored 12.8 points. He hit 2.5 threes, and that's better than a solid rate. He gets 1.6 steals. He had that game where he got 8 steals as well. He rebounds pretty well, 6 rebounds a game. But the shooting is a concern, 39% from the field and 35% from three. Bob Cove, flirting with that top 50 value, I'm not convinced that it gets better for him from here. If Ingram comes, he's in a real lot of trouble in terms of his role. He'll play as a nice sort of sixth man off the bench, but it won't be the sort of role that he's... He only played 28 minutes a night this year, but he has a rotational role, a 20 to 24 minute a night role, and you have to be viewing him that way in dynasty leagues. It's a lot of water to go under the bridge. He's going to be a tough guy to consider in the top 100 next year, depending on what happens with these other players, but he could be the guy that gets squeezed out or marginalized and not playing as big a role moving forward. The next player, Jahlil Okafor. Okay. He was okay for what he was. He was just outside the top 100 in 9-cat leagues, 85th in 8-cat leagues. He's 8-2, his punt rank value, he was 72nd, so obviously an improvement there. But he played a lot of minutes, he took a lot of shots, and he didn't do much else. He averaged 17.5 points, that's great. He averaged 7 rebounds. That's not good for a guy that's playing center and was considered to be a pretty decent rebounder. Nerlens Noel is considered a weak rebounder, and he out-rebounded Okafor and played less minutes than Okafor, and that's a bit of a concern. He blocked 1.2 shots, didn't think he'd really get to that level. His passing was poor. He averaged 2.3 turnovers to 1.2 assists. That's not great. Yeah, no steals, 0.4 steals. He was a 69% free throw shooter, which is better than what he was in college. And he was 51% from the field. Those numbers can all improve. And his free throw mechanics looked a lot better than what I anticipated. I think that can go up, but to me, he's going to be a points, he's going to be a rebounds, he's going to be a field goal percentage, he's going to be a free throw percentage guy. That's where the value is going to come. He's not going to be approaching 1.8 to 2 blocks a game. He's not going to help you in assists. He's not going to help you in steals. He's not going to help you in threes. He's going to be a 4-category guy and maybe hurting you in turnovers. That will get cut down. His defense was deplorable. It was really bad at times. His advanced stats don't look great. He was 9th on the Sixers in win shares, which is not ideal. If we look at win shares per 48, which takes into account the fact that he didn't play as many games, he was 8th, so not that much better. His offensive box score plus minus, he was at negative 2.6. That's really bad. His defense, negative 1.5 for a total of negative 4.1, which was 12th on the team. That's really bad. His VORP was below replacement level. His PER, it was above average, but it wasn't great. He's got a lot to improve on, but he doesn't feel like he's going to remain in Philadelphia. And that is a concern with him. But like I said with Nerlens Noel, you could be able to get Jahlil Okafor at a bit of a bargain, but you need to work out what his ceiling is. To me, it's not top 50. I don't think he can become a top 50 player in fantasy. So if someone goes, I'll give him up for a top 70 pick, that's not a bargain. That, to me, is sort of where he fits, around that top 70. That's probably where he peaks, maybe top 60. I don't see him becoming a top 40, top 30 guy. No chance. Maybe he sneaks into the top 50 for maybe one or two seasons. But I'm just not convinced of Okafor producing great numbers. He needs a lot to work on. To me, he's the guy that gets squeezed. They put Joel Embiid in here. Now, Embiid's not going to be able to play 30-plus minutes. He'll be on a minutes limit for pretty much the whole season, I'd say 20 to 22 minutes. But what that does is it cuts down what Okafor can do. He won't be able to play 30 minutes. He might play 28 minutes a night if he remains in Philadelphia. And then they'll want to play Nerlens Noel at center so they can get Darius Saric at power forward. And if Simmons is there, they're going to want to get him at power forward. So things are not looking great for Okafor. It could be a great time to buy low with uncertainty, but if his owner doesn't believe in this uncertainty, he goes, no, Okafor's the best, he's going to play 35 minutes, look at him, he averaged 18 points as a rookie, which is all true, but to me, the signs don't point to anything great for him, so it all depends on who you're dealing with. If someone is really uncertain and doesn't value him, you might be able to get him at a bargain. If someone doesn't see the concerns, then you're not going to be able to get him at a bargain price. So it's all about working out who's got him, the thought process of that person, but don't look at him and go, I have got a top 30 player sitting here and I got him for a top 70 type player and that's a win. Because to me, it's not. I'm really concerned about what Okafor can do. He might thrive on another team. His defense might really pick up, but to me, he's extremely limited in a fantasy sense. And four categories is not a terrible return. It's pretty good, but he's not pulling down 15 rebounds a game. He might be a decent rebounder, a slightly above average rebounder. It'll be his scoring and field goal percentage that really gets everything done for him. His blocks will be... He's not even a four category, he's a three category guy. And that's a real concern to me. So I'm not a massive Jahlil Okafor fan. Ish Smith, the next guy we'll talk about, came across and really lit things up for the Sixers, got them to, I think, 5-8 through a January stretch, which was obviously better than the 1-22 or whatever they were before that. But was he actually good? I'm going to say no. He played 77 games. He played 29 minutes a game. He averaged 12.5 points. He hit 0.7 threes, 4 rebounds, 6.5 assists, 1.1 steals. He shot 41-69, though. That's really bad. He was not ideal. He ranked... fit nine category leagues, 149th. And you go, you know what, he had some time in New Orleans, fine. Post All-Star, he ranked 130th in nine category leagues. That's bad. Eight category, 86th, if you take the turnovers away, 102 for the full season. In a punt situation, an 8-2, well, he was okay. 106 for the season, 98th post All-Star, but not great. He's 27 years old. He's an unrestricted free agent. He is going to want to get paid to some degree. And I don't know. Now, The Colangelo's brought him over. Well, Jerry Colangelo brought him over in that trade. There was no way Sam Hinkie traded 2 seconds to get him over. No way. But they need shooting. He can't shoot. And they need someone to shoot. Now, they're not going to be able to get a guy like Mike Conley. But they need to be... Maybe a trade is. They trade Jahlil Okafor and get Dennis Schroeder. Maybe that happens. Schroeder's not a great shooter either, but he's a lot better than what Ish Smith is. And he at least provides some sort of outside threat. You read Sixers websites and Sixers blogs, majority of them, they don't think Ish Smith's going to be back. They don't want Ish Smith back. He was objectively awful for them at big stretches. He had a couple of big games for fantasy, put up big numbers, but some of the time, it's yes, he put up big numbers, but how bad was he in doing it? And that is going to limit what he is able to do moving forward. If we look at what Ish Smith did from an advanced perspective, he was a -2 in box score plus minus. That's really not, it's not good. It's really poor, in fact. His win shares were 0.4. So he did come across, the team did get more wins. But overall, in the negative play that he had towards the end of the season did cost him. He was 13th in win shares per 48 minutes, less than Nick Stauskas. That's really average. It's beyond average. And this is just his time in Philadelphia as well. This is not including what he did in New Orleans, these numbers. These are his Philadelphia numbers. They're really poor. He had a below average PER. He had a true shooting of only 46%. Just, he wasn't great. So, Ish Smith, to me, in a dynasty, is a real risky prospect. He doesn't have a team. He might not be back to Philadelphia, which is legitimately the best opportunity for him. Anywhere else he goes, I can't see how he starts anywhere. He would be a backup at best. I wouldn't mind him on the Bulls as a backup point guard. I think he's a better option than Aaron Brooks. I think the Bulls also should look to draft a point guard with pick 14, Wade Baldwin, thank you. But I don't see where Smith fits in the NBA. Yes, he was decent, and he looked decent in New Orleans as well. But these are two horrible, horrible teams, New Orleans and Philadelphia. They were really bad. And he still wasn't awesome in that sort of situation. So to me, I am concerned about Ish Smith. I don't see a silver lining. He's 27 already. He's at peak. This is peak. Things don't get better after 27, I don't think. I can't see an arrow pointing upward for Ish Smith. So in dynasty leagues, I'm not a fan. Zubin Petrao is watching the show live, and he says, "Do you think the Colangelo will do a better job than Hinkie?" No, he will not. I really like what Hinkie did. I believed in what Hinkie was doing. He made some interpersonal issues with communication with staff. He had issues there. I thought he did make a mistake not bringing Ish Smith back at the start of last season, or not having a functional point guard, and he obviously made a mistake in trusting in Kendall Marshall. But no, I don't think he'll do better than Sam Hinkie. I'm worried about some of the decisions the Colangelos will make. I think that what Hinkie did will pay off. You're going to see three Hinkie guys coming into this team this year: Saric, Embiid, and that number one pick, whoever that is. Obviously, he's not making the pick, but it's not going to take a genius to pick Ingram or Simmons at that number one spot. So I don't know. I don't think Colangelo will do a better job than what Hinkie did, despite the fact that they didn't have wins, and despite it was very overblown, the tanking. It wasn't 20 years. It wasn't 10 years. It wasn't 5 years. It was 3 years. And that's a long time for some, but I think it is going to pay off, and I think it is going to work out in the Sixers' favor. So thank you for the question. Or the comment, or no question. Jeremy Grant is the next guy we're going to look at. He finished the season as the 168th ranked player in 9-cat, 153rd in 8-cat leagues. He showed improvement this season, there's no doubt about that. But in an 8-2 setting, a punt setting, he still finished 176, so that's actually a downgrade on his overall 8-cat ranking, which is not something you'd expect from someone who had some poor shooting numbers as Jeremy Grant did. Now, he played 27 minutes a night. He got 9.7 points. He hit half a three. He had 4.5 rebounds, 0.7 steals, 1.6 blocks. He was at 42-66 and shot 24% from three. If he doesn't start hitting threes, and that's two seasons where he hasn't been able to do it, you have to really doubt what his role is in the league. And again, is his position three? It can't be a three. If you can't shoot, you can't play as a three. I don't think you can do it. And is it a four? Or is he better than Saric? Is he better than Noel? Is he better than Okafor? Is he better than Embiid? Is he better than Simmons / Ingram? No, he's not better than any of those guys. So where does he fit? On the worst team in the league, is the sixth choice forward or sixth choice big man. That doesn't scream greatness to me. Now, yes, he did take a step up from his rookie season to his second year. But with the Sixers getting better and getting more talent in, for him to take another step up to be a player who's going to be drafted in standard leagues, for him to be a consistent top 100 player, I think it's really a struggle for Jeremy Grant to be that guy. In win shares per 48, he ranks 7th. So he's actually ahead of a guy like Jahlil Okafor and a guy like Ish Smith. So not bad along those areas. Defensively, he was really good in terms of his defensive box score plus minus. He was 3rd on the team behind Noel and Elton Brand. And he had a pretty good box plus minus of -1.3, which is 5th on the team. So he was decent. And he did show improvement. He got his true shooting percentage over 50% as well. But he needs to do more. He needs to rebound the ball better. He needs to shoot the ball better. He doesn't pass. He's a poor passer. He won't be doing that. And I'm not sure where his role goes from now. Is he better than Robert Covington? He's better at some things. He's definitely not better offensively, though. His offense is a vast distance worse than what Covington. His defense is better, but his offense is worse. So it really depends on who else is there. If Noel goes, then they need more defensive big men. Then I can see Grant having that thing. If Noel stays, then Covington has a bigger role because he's more of an offensive 3-4. So that, to me, it becomes down to those two, into what happens with those big men as to what happens with Jeremy Grant and Robert Covington. I do think that Grant is a decent player. I don't think he's a spectacular player. He is young. He is heading into his third year. He's 21, so he's still got room to grow, and this could be a bit of a breakout for him. But if he doesn't start hitting the three, it is a concern for how he's able to fit in the league. So Jeremy Grant, I am a little bit worried about what he's going to be able to do moving forward. I guess we just wait and see. But to me, I'm not putting a massive amount of stock in what Jeremy Grant can do just because of those downsides that he has. He was a positive contributor in one category last year, and that was blocks. His turnovers were pretty decent. He didn't handle the ball that well, but he was negative in points, threes, rebounds, assists, steals, field goal percentage, free throw percentage. And as a big, which he sort of is, you can't be a negative in field goal percentage. You can't be a power forward and hit 42% of your shots. That's just not going to happen. 24 from three is abysmal. 66 from the line doesn't help there. He just doesn't do enough to me. to be considered someone who there's no way he's a standard league guy next season. And to me, he's more of a someone I'm not attacking in dynasty leagues, because I think that it just he's got too many holes in his game for me. TJ McConnell, a real surprise to start the season. Undrafted rookie, came in and started the year for quite a while, at least until Kendall Marshall came back, and then Marshall was putrid, and then we brought Ish Smith in, and he settled into a backup role. I think McConnell is perfectly suited to that backup role, and he won't be... Look, I don't think he'll be starting as the point guard next season, but I think that, and going by a lot of things that I've read and seen, that him as a backup point guard over Ish Smith is probably something that the Sixers prefer. He was 186th in 9 cat leagues last year, 163rd in 8 cat leagues. Had a much better pre-All-Star than post-All-Star. That's because of the arrival of Ish Smith. But his per 36 numbers, he was third on the team in terms of per 36 fantasy value, because he did put up some decent numbers. And we look at what numbers he actually put up, TJ McConnell. He played 20 minutes a game, only 6 points, but he hit half a 3. He had 3 rebounds and 4.5 assists, which in less than 20 minutes is really good. 1.2 steals. He was 47% from the field, which is tremendous for a point guard. Struggled at the free throw line, going 63%, and hit 35% of his threes. Didn't turn the ball over very much, just 1.7 turnovers in his 20 minutes a game. In terms of his advanced numbers, he was okay. He was fifth on the team in win shares. He had a pretty decent win shares per 48, fifth on the team there. Seventh in box score plus minus. I thought that for an undrafted rookie free agent to play 81 games and to look not overawed out there was an impressive feat for McConnell. Is he ever more than a backup in this league? Pretty much no. I don't think he can be, but you're talking deep dynasty leagues that go 250 players deep. He's going to have a role where he's a top 250 player to me for the next 2 to 3 years. So I do think that he has value in that sense. And I wouldn't be shocked if they retain him and let Ish Smith walk to run as the backup point guard. That's the sort of the way that I'd be looking at that. Who's next? Isaiah Cannon. He does one thing very well, Isaiah Cannon, and that's shoot threes. He was just inside the top 200 in 9 cat leagues, 192nd in 8 cat leagues. His punt rank in 8 cats, 8-2, was 165. It's okay, but how do you keep him on the court? He hit 2.3 triples a game, which is great, in 26 minutes, 11 points. But 1.8 assists for a point guard is terrible. 2.3 rebounds, 0.7 steals, 36% from the field, 36 from 3, 83 from the free throw line. He's got one skill, and you need to have more than one skill. Now, they did play him at shooting guard quite a bit last season, and that worked to a degree, especially for a team that was needing shooting. But with an unguaranteed year coming up next season, I'm not really sure that Cannon remains on this team. He was middle of the road. He had decent win shares, 1.4 win shares. His box score plus minus was okay. He was eighth on the team there. He was still a below average player though. And yes, the 3-pointers were nice, but I really don't think he hits 2.3 threes again next year. I think that he might have a role on a team somewhere, but I don't think it's in Philadelphia, and I don't think that he only finished 200th this year. I don't think that he retains or gets close to that value again, which is a bit of a shame for a guy that showed a little bit of promise as a shooter, but his defense was atrocious, his passing was poor, and it's probably going to end up with his contract being done. Hollis Thompson, another guy who can do some things, but overall, he's not all that good. He ranked 202nd last year. Had a really strong post-All-Star where he's 153rd, and that's for 9 cat leagues. His 8 cat ranking was lower because he doesn't turn the ball over really at all. And his punt ranking, again, lower. Again, 232 in a full season, 8-2. So he wasn't really a threat in any sort of standard leagues in that sense. He played 77 games. He played 28 minutes a night. Didn't get to 10 points, but did hit 2 triples a game. But does nothing else. Half a steal, 0.3 blocks. Less than 40% shooting, 72% from the line. He shot 38% from three, and that's his real calling card, his ability to hit threes. But he doesn't do enough to me. He's been in the system for a few years. I think he's the longest tenured Sixer at this point, along with Nerlens Noel, but Noel didn't play that first season. So I think there's concerns about Thompson. He's 24 years old now. What does he have to offer? He's sort of that middle of the road player with that 1.2 win shares. His box score plus minus numbers, they were average. He had negative 2 on defense, negative 1.1 on offense. He was a negative 3.1 overall. So, and what that means is that per 100 possessions, he would be 3.1 points worse than an average player on an average team. So that means he's not good, basically. I don't like much about Hollis Thompson moving forward. I'm not really sure that there's much of a... Yeah, look, there might be... Maybe... Look, if Jakar Sampson's playing on a team, then there's room for Hollis Thompson as a three-point shooter who can hit shots, but he doesn't do very much else very well at all, and that's going to limit him. Now, in terms of contract, Hollis Thompson has got a... he's got a team option for next year for $1 million. Hard to say whether they take that up. You'd have to think that they would. You would say that they would pick up that $1 million option. But, again, in terms of role... I don't think they're going to be looking at... I don't think he's playing 28 minutes a night. So I don't think there's much to really like in terms of Hollis Thompson moving forward. Carl Landry was really, really good for this team. Like, shockingly good. In terms of per 36 fantasy rankings, he was ranked 30th for the season in 9K leagues. Yeah, tremendous. His advanced stats were out of control, which we'll look at in a second. He played just 36 games. He had that wrist injury, which was made the start of his season pretty short. 16 minutes a night. 10 points a game in 16 minutes, really good. 4.1 rebounds, 56 and 74, so solid percentages, but he offers nothing defensively. No steals, no blocks, doesn't pass. What does he do? Now, he provides veteran leadership, but again, Noel, Embiid, Saric, Jeremy Grant, Simmons/Ingram, like Okafor. These are big guys. What's Landry going to do in that sort of environment? Now, he was third on the team in box score plus minus. Pretty impressive. He played 36 games, and he was second on the team in win shares, which is hilarious considering how bad everyone else must have been. He had 2.1, equal with Jeremy Grant, for second on the team. His win shares per 48 led the team. Now, really contributed a lot when he got here, and has been a really serviceable player through most of his career. But he's going to be back next season, because he's got one more year left. He's got $6 million left. He was part of that salary dump that the Kings made. But in terms of him getting minutes, I don't think he's going to play the way that he did down the stretch. He's 32 years old. He's on the decline. There's really not much to see with Carl Landry. But if they're in a situation where they have to rely upon Carl Landry to be their best player, like he was for stretches down the end of the season, then things have not gone well in year one of the Colangelo era in Philadelphia. Nick Stauskas. He was bad, real, real bad. He ranked 264th in 9 category leagues, 238th in 8 category leagues. These are not good numbers. 267th in an 8-2 situation. Didn't really improve post All-Star break. What is it like about Nick Stauskas? He shot atrociously to start, but then he had a couple of months shooting where he was hitting 40% of his threes and looked decent. He played 25 minutes a night. Only 8.5 points, 1.5 threes, 2 assists, 2.5 rebounds. Defensive numbers not there. He's got to be better than a 77% free throw shooter, and I think that he can be because he did start to show that improvement. But unlike a guy like Isaiah Cannon, unlike a guy like Hollis Thompson, unlike a guy even like Jeremy Grant or Ish Smith, I think that Stauskas is in for a pretty decent improvement. It's pretty unlikely the Sixers are taking a shooting guard with pick one. And by pretty unlikely, I mean there's no chance they're taking a shooting guard at pick one. If they get one at pick 24 or 26, cool. But I don't think it's impacting Stauskas. He's heading into his third year. Fingers crossed, he has an injury-free preseason, which he didn't last year. He had issues with his ankle, which caused him to miss quite a bit of time. Then he had stress reactions in his leg, which also bothered him. And you saw how rusty he was to start the season. He was coming across from a shit organization to a shit organization in a different way, going from Sacramento to Philadelphia. So that puts a strain on what he's able to do. Some stability to a degree. At least he's got the same coach, a different front office in Philadelphia. Yeah, players around him start to build on some of those things that he showed in that end of last season. Now, he's got a long way to come. When you're ranked outside the top 250 in your second year on the worst team in the league, you've got to do better. But I think he can do better. Now, he's not going to be a standard league target of mine at this point. But I did trade for him after the regular season, or pretty close to after the regular season, I think, in the Red Rock Dynasty League. I traded for him. I don't know who I gave up to get him, actually, but he was on a decent contract. in our league, we've got a $400 salary cap. I think he's on a $10 contract for a couple more years, because the third year and the fourth year is where players really start to take off. And he was showing enough signs to me that he could be a guy that might absorb 25 minutes a night next season. I don't see, he's not in a situation to me like Cannon, like Thompson, like Grant, like Smith, like Covington, who are going to see their minutes drop with these players coming in. I think that Stauskas could potentially go from 25 to 27 if he shows improvement. I think there's a little bit of hope in Stauskas. People that own Stauskas might think that his value is pretty low and they might be pretty desperate to get rid of him. If we're talking deep leagues, so leagues that are going over 250, maybe if they just go over 200, 220, I might be seeing if I can just grab Stauskas, because I think his arrow, unlike a lot of the players in this team, his arrow is heading up. How high does it go? Does it go from 260 to 200? Does it go from 260 to 150? Does it go from 260 to 100? It could do all of those things. I think the 100 is probably being a little bit optimistic, but I think that Stauskas can provide an improvement. This is a big year for him. If it doesn't happen this year, I'm doubtful it happens at all. But to me, he's a similar guy to players like Jeremy Lamb, who had a big improvement this year, and Evan Fournier, who took off tremendously. I don't think he's anywhere near as good as Fournier, because you know how much I think of Fournier. He's in a similar-ish situation to Will Barton and Alan Crabb, these sort of guys who really started to have breakout years. And as a lottery pick, he's got talent. We know he's got talent. But does it develop? I'm optimistic. Not massively optimistic, but I am optimistic. His advance numbers were terrible last year. They weren't great. He finished 10th in win shares. He finished his box score plus minus. He finished 10th. His defensive box score plus minus, he was 12th. But offensively, he was better. He was 8th. And that's where he's going to have to build. Now, he's going to have to become a better passer. He's going to have to become a better defender. But I do think that Stauskas has an ability to improve. So to me, he's a guy that in a dynasty league that I really think that he is worth a bit of a gamble. And I don't think his price is going to be really much lower than what it currently is. So he is a player to consider. To me, I said, I've already made that move and acquired him. And I do think that he is someone who is probably going to be off a lot of people's radars. And he's worth having a look at. Rishaun Holmes is another guy who I do really, really like. The problem I have with him is injuries. He bothered by an Achilles problem for a lot of the season. Didn't play anywhere near as much as you would want. Only 51 games at 14 minutes. But what we did see from him was pretty interesting and enough that he has to stick around. Now, the problem here, again, is big men. There's too many big men here for him to really have a role. But he could be included in trades. And I think that heading across, he could be a guy who really... it really starts to flourish. I do like what Rishaun Holmes can do as a second-round draft pick. Now, he's on the books for a pretty team-friendly deal. He's got 3 more years at basically $1 million each. That's not a lot of money at all, talking about a salary cap going up to $90 million. He's dirt cheap for the next 3 years. The Sixers are going to want to keep him around. If they do trade guys like maybe Okafor, maybe Noel, then he'll be there and he can blossom into a bigger role. What he did last season, he played 14 minutes, he was at 5.6 points, but he had 0.8 blocks at 51% from the field. He only shot 18% from three. He can add that to his game, and in doing that and rebounding the ball a little bit better can be something that really starts to improve what he can do. But defensively, I do like what Rishaun Holmes can do. In terms of his win shares per 48, he was second on this team. And that's, again, a measure of win shares based, excluding minutes. Carl Landry was the only guy that was ahead of him. Defensive box score plus minus, he finished fourth. He was at zero. The only guys ahead of him, Grant, Brandon, Noel. Offensively, he was only a negative one, so really not bad in that category as well. He was fourth on the team in box score plus minus he only played 702 minutes for the year. He was a positive VORP. Not many players in this team were positives. He was above average in PER. A lot of things going his way. Now, his rebound percentage, he needs to get that up. His block rate is fantastic, second on the team, just behind Grant at 4.3. He needs to rebound the ball better. He needs to shoot better because he started taking threes but not hitting them. But I do think that Holmes is, we're talking really, really deep stuff here for Rishaun Holmes, considering he ranked 272nd for the season. But a lot of that was brought down by his lack of playing time at the end due to the injury and the limited minutes, because he was 229th pre-All-Star. This is 9 category leagues. And if we look at his 8 minus 2, his punt situation, he was 246th. pre-All-Star. And if you look at a 9 minus 2, so a 9 category punt situation, he was 200th pre-All-Star. So I think there's a little bit, I think there's a lot to like actually with Rishaun Holmes. And he can improve. It might not be, it's probably a 2 year away sort of thing. But if he gets traded, he could be packaged in with a Jahlil Okafor situation. I do really think that a guy that could be you talk about 3 and D players, he could be, from a fantasy point of view, a 3 and block sort of guy that hits a high field goal percentage, a Serge, maybe a mini Serge Ibaka. Maybe he's not going to be as good as Serge Ibaka, but I do think that he shows a lot. And he was a guy that translated really well coming out of college, and he is a guy that I definitely have got my eye on in dynasty formats. Probably won't happen next year, but definitely someone for you to keep an eye on. Alton Brand, we don't really need to cover him. He's pretty much cooked. Kendall Marshall was atrocious. He will not have that contract guaranteed. He ranked outside the top 400 last season for 9 cat leagues, 409th, 359th in 8 category leagues. Punting situation, 344, the 8 minus 2. He was just not great at all. He finished second worst on the team in win shares. He was 16th on the team, or out of the players, out of the 18 players that played, he was 18th in win shares per 48. His box score plus minus, he was 16th there as well, as a negative 8.8. Nothing was good about Kendall Marshall. He was limited athletically before the ACL injury, and it got worse after that. There is nothing to like about Kendall Marshall. To me, he is not someone that I take a punt on and go, well, maybe he gets back in a dynasty league. There is nothing that I'm liking here about Kendall Marshall. The last player that remained on the Sixers roster at the end of the season was Christian Wood. And Wood is a guy who was a restricted free agent. He was on the roster, off the roster, on 10 days, all that sort of stuff. He's a restricted free agent now. I want him to come back. To me, he fits into that Rishaun Holmes sort of mold, but he didn't really show much. He played only 9 minutes a game, and I would have loved for him to start getting 20 minutes a night at the end when Brand and Landry were getting all those minutes when Noel and Okafor were out. It didn't happen, though, and that concerns me a little bit. But in only 8.5 minutes a game, he got 0.4 blocks, 0.3 steals. Like, these are really good defensive numbers, 2.2 rebounds, like really, really super numbers. And if we look at what he did in terms of a per 36 basis, his fantasy rank per 36, 169. That shows signs of improvement. His stats over the season per 36, 15 points, 1-3, 9.5 rebounds, 1.2 steals, 1.7 blocks. These are decent numbers. And there's a little bit, he's definitely got intrigue as to whether he comes back at this team. I don't know. But he was a shock to me when he didn't get drafted, and would have liked to seen more from Christian Wood when those injuries started to happen. In terms of his like advanced metrics, they were pretty decent for a guy that barely played. His win share numbers, he was third on the team in win shares per 48, and that's pretty impressive. The top three guys on this team in win shares per 48 were Landry, Holmes, and Wood, and you know, that's probably saying something about this team as well. But Christian Wood was better than quite a few players who are on this squad in terms of their contribution to what they were able to do, and he just didn't play really enough to have enough of a long-standing impact. But I do really think that he can be a very deep league, a 300-plus league sort of player, but he can be that guy for the next couple of years that could provide that. One quick, and that's all the players who ended the season on the roster, one quick note, just to talk about one of my mates, Tony Roten. He played just 8 games for the Philadelphia 76ers, 144 minutes, yet still, and win shares is not a rate statistic, it is a aggregate statistic, so it's not like, oh yeah, he only played those minutes. He played 144 minutes and still was a negative 0.8. That is absolutely horrible. He lost in the 144 minutes he played, he cost the Sixers a win. That's really, really bad. It's really terrible. His win shares per 48, a negative 2.63. It is horrifically bad. His box score plus minus, a negative 13.4. Now, that is very noisy because of the limited sample size, but he was atrocious. And if the Knicks think that he's going to be their starting point guard, they are laughing. And by laughing, I mean they should be crying, because he is terrible. He is a terrible player, and he's got very big fantasy downside as well. Interesting to see what the Knicks end up doing with that point guard position, but if it's Tony Roden, I will cackle, because he is terrible. All right, I'm going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsor, which is today Loot Crate. Now, Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service. It's for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. For less than $20 a month, you get 6 to 8 items, including licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, and unique one-of-a-kind items. Head across to lootcrate.com/redrock. That's our own unique URL, and it tells the people at Loot Crate that you came from listening to this podcast. And if you then use the coupon code REDROCK, you save $3 off any new subscription. The crate for this month is based on power. So we're talking about Marvel items, two Marvel items in the crate, Warcraft, Dragon Ball Z. We've got something for your kitchen, a cool figure. There's the monthly t-shirt, the monthly pin as well. Everything's happening over at Loot Crate. Go to lootcrate.com/redrock. That tells the guys from Loot Crate you came from listening to this podcast, and it helps this show grow and attract further sponsors. So thank you to Loot Crate for sponsoring today's show. Now I'm going to take a quick break because I need a drink because I've been talking for way longer than I anticipated, and then we'll be back to answer some of your questions about the Philadelphia 76ers. Before we get into the questions, I want to talk about a couple of drafted and stashed players for the Philadelphia 76ers. Of course, the number one of those is Dario Saric, and we'll talk about how he went. I think he's still playing over in Europe at the moment. Currently, the stats I've got on him at the moment, he played 24 games in the EuroLeague. He averaged 11.7 points, 5.8 rebounds, 1.5 assists, half a steal, half a block. He hit 1.2 threes at 40%. He was 50% from the field overall. He shot 94% from the free throw line. So he profiles as that Dirk-ish European power forward, Tony Kukoc guy. I think he can pass better than what he's shown here, just 1.5 assists per game. But Saric is coming over this year. He's looked pretty solid, I think, playing over here for Anadolu Efes in Istanbul in the Turkish league. I think that he's going to be a very intriguing player as to how they fit him. Now, how he fits with a guy like Simmons and with Noel and with Okafor and all these players remains to be seen. But he can play a little bit smaller maybe at the three. Obviously, his role is going to be better at the four, but his shooting will enable him to go quite big at times and maybe play him at three. I don't love him there, but it can happen. He's 6'9". But if he's hitting threes at 40%, then that's interesting. Now, the last 2 years, he shot them at 31%. So has he improved? Maybe. Or is this season a bit of a fluke? It's not like it's a terribly small sample size. He's had 72 attempts, but that's also not massive. So he's not shooting a huge amount of threes, but it is 3.1 attempts or three attempts per game. So it's not completely terrible. But Saric coming over, to me, I don't know how you gauge his dynasty, but I think it's going to be good. I think he is going to be a solid player. But I reckon the value that people will place on him will be too high for me to try and acquire him, because they will have held on to him for the last 2 years and they'll be thinking, yeah, he's going to be this revolutionary type player. I'm not sure that happens, and there is, again, the confusion is what happens in that front court. Another player that they've got drafted and stashed, Vasily Micic, who is who's playing over at Bayern Munich. He's played 21 games in the EuroLeague this year. His number's not so impressive, just 32% from the field, 33% from three. 0.6 triples made a game, 4.6 points, 3 assists, 1.9 turnovers, 0.3 steals. He's a point guard. If you don't know, he was a second-round draft choice, I think, last season. Actually, no, the year before. Maybe he comes over, but I don't think that he really would beat out, say, TJ McConnell. And then you got Kendall Marshall. Maybe they retain him. Maybe Ishmith gets brought back. I don't think Micic comes over and is all of a sudden the starting point guard and starts putting up big numbers. So not massively keen on him for Dynasty. He might be an okay guy, but think more Nando De Colo, Pablo Prigioni, Much a la Huertas, Hal Neto sort of players, guys that have come over from Europe as advanced rookies and done okay, but really haven't been able to trouble the fantasy scorers all that much. Now, in terms of questions that you guys have sent over, quite a few actually. First one's an easy one for me. Lil Troy at Born Lil Troy 31. Over under wins next season, 12.5. Over, easily over. If the over under comes out at 12.5, easily smashing over the over there, 12.5. Sam Q at Squad Panda. How high would you take Saric in a rookie draft this year? Obviously after Simmons and Ingram, but over Dunn or Bender? I would probably, for starters, I don't know why he's in a rookie draft this year. When, to me, if he's in a rookie draft, he should have been taken in a rookie draft when he was actually drafted. But if that's the way your league runs, yes, he's obviously after Simmons and after Ingram. Do I take him over Dunn? No, I wouldn't. Do I take him over Bender? Now, I think the Bender has got a real good opportunity to go to Boston here at pick 3, if not to Phoenix, and I think the Bender's going to have a pretty impressive season. So I would probably put Saric after those guys, maybe at 5. There are a couple other guys you could consider in terms of rookies, which we're going to get into a lot more later on in the coming month or so. But I don't think I have him over those guys, but probably sort of just around that 5 zone there. Irv Dizzle, who's at Irvy_1_Kenobi. Thank you, Irv, for your question. He says, "You got to do something on the potential return of Embiid and what it would mean for Okafor and Nerlens, and also the impact of one or two picks on Covington." Well, I've mentioned Covington already. I think he has a bit of a drop off. The return of Embiid. Embiid is not going to be playing 30 minutes a night. He's going to be eased in. He might play 15 minutes a night for the first 3 months. He might play 22 minutes a night for the season. And yes, it will impact, but I don't imagine that Okafor remains on this team for the duration of the season. And they'll play Noel at center, and they'll play Embiid as the backup there and play them together for a little bit and then be able to move Saric into the four. That's the way I see it running. I think Embiid for a seasonal league won't really be worth the risk, but he has got tremendous, tremendous talent. He can hit threes, he can block shots, he rebounds, he scores. He is going to be a real fantasy dynamo if he can stay healthy, but that might never happen. But if it does, we're talking top 50, top 40 potential for Embiid. But it is going to impact those other guys. The guys over at Fantasy Sports Addicts, which is at FSAA, and the AA is spelt double, and then the letter A, they asked a similar question. So what should dynasty owners expect from Embiid? I think that, again, it is a big risk with Embiid. I don't think anything really happens big this season. But 2017, I imagine that he can become a real monster from a fantasy point of view and should be a top 50 or 60 player by that 2017-18 season. This is all assuming that the foot stays healthy, but he has got really amazing upside. Scott Robbins, who is in that Red Rock Dynasty League I was talking about before, at Bajeko. He says, what are realistic targets for Okafor? He is getting dealt this summer. I agree with you that he is getting dealt at some point in the summer. Realistic targets, well, I think that they should be looking to trade him for a point guard. Schroeder is the guy that I threw out earlier. You might throw some draft picks in there on either side. Probably, you know, Atlanta would want to send a draft pick back. Realistic, like who wants Okafor? That's the concern. Who's going to take Okafor back in a trade? Yeah, Boston. If Boston offered up Marcus Smart for Jahlil Okafor, I'd take that in 100 milliseconds. I don't even know what I'm trying to say, but as quick as I possibly could. They're not throwing that out there though. That's the concern. Do you take Jeff Teague back if Atlanta offers him instead of Schroeder? I probably don't. I would hold out for more for Okafor. There's not many great situations out there for him, I don't think. If the Kings wanted to throw Darren Collison your way, I'd want a little bit more back probably, but I'd consider it. If Oklahoma City wanted to throw a campaign at me, then absolutely, I'd be all over that in a very, very quick flash. But I think they want to trade him. I think they need to trade him for a point guard. That's the way I'd be looking at it. John Gross Didier, who's on Twitter at John Gross Didier. Can Robert Covington still be good for fantasy next year, or will his minutes drop due to being bad at basketball? He's not bad at basketball. I think he's good at basketball. I think he's above average at basketball. I think he's a solid sixth or seventh man at basketball. But yeah, he'll drop. He's gonna have a a concern next season, especially if they bring Brandon Ingram in, and I think that he will struggle to be a top 100 player next year is my early guess. A lot of these questions are very, very similar. Jay Lamb at Lamb J. How will they use their bigs next season? Covered that. Is Ish Smith their long-term point guard? Not a chance. What round would you draft Bob Cove? I would probably, and I'm as big a Bob Cove fan as there is at this point, knowing what I think I know and what I anticipate to know, I think that you don't take him inside the top 10 rounds. Beben asked a very similar question. Assuming Embiid plays, how does it affect the overall? I've done that one. Ben Clark at Scouse_Raw. Would it be smart to avoid most sixes in Dynasty with the strategic pivot away from tanking approach? It's an interesting question. No, I don't, because why would you avoid Embiid? Why would you avoid Saric? Why would you avoid Noel? Stauskas, Holmes. These guys can all grow. Yeah, I agree. Okafor is a risky target. Ish Smith, Bob Cuff, Jeremy Grant, the guys I all talked about. There is a risk with all those guys. But a lot of these other players that have had a chance to develop, Hollis Thompson, Isaiah Cannon, Ish Smith, I am concerned about them. But the studs, the talented guys, Noel, he's the main one. Like, I'm not avoiding him. Embiid, Saric, I do think they've got value. It's not like Philadelphia is just going to go out there, okay, we're going to have Kevin Durant, we're going to get Mike Conley in here, we're going to get Nick Batum in. Like, none of those things are happening. So, yeah, they'll bring in that talent. And Embiid, Saric, Ingram/Simmons coming in is a big talent infusion, and it's going to hurt some of these players, but it doesn't mean avoid them all in general. Joseph Diefenbach offers a very similar question. What are they going to do in the front court? Cool. I think Okafor is the one that goes. And that's it. That is questions done. So a lot of questions regarding that. And we just don't know at this point. We don't know who they're picking in the draft. We don't know what sort of offers are going to be out there. But you would have to think that not two, but one will get traded this summer. That would be my guess. And if it's me, it's Okafor, clearly. Embiid can be a really good scorer down low. He can score. Noel's not a great scorer, but what he offers defensively is so, it's so rare to find a guy as defensively good as what Noel is. And the ability he has to protect the rim and to pair with Embiid as well, I don't think it's a horrible combination. So he'd be the guy that I would be keeping, but maybe both guys are expendable. It still obviously remains up in the air. All right, I talked way longer than I anticipated on the Philadelphia 76ers. Tomorrow, we're going to be back with another one of these podcasts. It's going to be Matt Smith joining me. We're going to be talking Phoenix Suns. And then after that, I'm going to attempt to go in order. So we'll go Lakers, we'll go we'll do Nets, and then we'll move on from there and eventually have all 30 done over the next month. And then we head into our NBA draft coverage with a few other little special shows shown in there as well, trying to work on a big NBA mock draft with our multiple people taking on multiple teams and doing a full first-round mock draft, which should be a real interesting thing to go on as we put on our GM hats and try to make sense of what's happening in the draft. But that'll be happening towards the middle to end of June. Of course, subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and wherever else you find good podcasts. Subscribe on YouTube, give us a thumbs up, give us a review if you like the content. And if you don't, just give us a thumbs up anyway. Visit lootcrate.com/redrock. And of course, Basketball Monster. You know about Basketball Monster. Get ready for next season. You can still check out all our stats and rankings and tools if you remember throughout the off season. And there's going to be we're going to have some great stuff coming up. Hardwood Paroxysm has also got awesome stuff happening. Great podcasts, great articles happening all throughout the playoffs. Enjoy the conference finals. Enjoy the NBA finals. Enjoy this series of podcasts. If you have any questions, you can tweet at me at redrock_Beeble. Any comments? Any feedback? Hey, I want you to do this in these shows. Do it. Yeah, let me know. I'm always open to suggestions and ways that I can improve the show. So if you could do that, awesome stuff. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.